You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, friends, you beautiful MFs. I'm so glad you could join me. I'm glad we're alive at the same time. Today, I'll talk about baseball, specifically the World Baseball Classic. I've got some money stuff to talk about, and we'll see what else. But first, let's do funny stuff. I don't know who said this. I didn't write down the name or the account name, but here's what it says. People singing happy birthday to you feels like a real-life unskippable ad. This is more of a keen observation from somebody who calls himself Rabbit Hole Bot. He says, doesn't the B in LGBTQ imply that there are only two genders? Yeah, I think it does. All right, courtesy of the Puns account on X, he's got a few good ones I'll share with you. These are funny. He says, I've been off work all week because my cow is sick. My boss thinks I'm milking it. Sorry, since I'm a dad, there will be dad jokes. Maybe I should have warned you. Here's another one, another dad joke. Same guy. He says, what do you call a hippie's wife? Mrs. Hippie. Mississippi. And what causes wrinkled clothes? An iron deficiency. You want some more dad jokes? All right, I got a few more. This one says, my son's birthday was today. When he came to see me, I didn't recognize him at first. I had never seen him before. Or, why does Waldo only wear stripes? You know, whenever I hear Waldo, it reminds me of going to the doctor when I was a kid and grabbing a Highlights magazine off the little coffee table, and I would try to find Waldo. Why does Waldo only wear stripes? Because he doesn't want to be spotted. And there's a lesson in there for you young kings listening. And that lesson is, if you take a girl out and she decides to wear leopard print, then you should know that she did that for a reason. And that reason is, she wants to be spotted with you. All right, here's something I learned last week before we get into the meat and potatoes. Are you familiar with the phrase internal plurals or mutated plurals, as they're also called? No, I wasn't either. They're a type of irregular plural noun that they don't add an S to become plural. What happens instead is what makes it plural is changing one or more of the internal vowel sounds within the word. So an example would be, I used one last week on the podcast. I said goings on. Another one would be passersby, attorneys general, AirPods Pro, mothers-in-law, conflicts of interest, runners-up. Those are all internal plurals, and I had never heard of that before. And they're all kind of pains in the ass. You see what I did there? You learn something new every day. Here's something else I learned. Have you ever seen the movie Shawshank Redemption? If not, you should. It's a great movie. But did you know that the director of that movie, a guy by the name of Frank Darabont, bought the rights to the story from Stephen King, who has since gone nuts, and that he paid only $5,000 for those rights, $5,000. And also, The Shawshank Redemption wasn't a box office hit because it competed at the time with Forrest Gump and Pulp Fiction at the theaters. All those movies came out at the same time. All right, this is a new study, according to the account called World Statistics. This study investigated how long it takes to get over an ex. So on average, it takes 4.18 years for the emotional attachment to an ex to be halfway dissolved. So for the typical person, the bond to an ex completely fades away at about the 8-year mark. Does that sound right to you? That is a long time to be hung up on somebody. One thing I know from my past relationships, it was much harder on me when I did the breaking up. But if I were to be dumped, I didn't have a problem with that at all for some reason. Have you been watching the baseball classic, the World Baseball Classic? I have watched it almost every night. The U.S. versus Dominican Republic game on Sunday night, that was the best baseball matchup I've ever seen, and I loved the passion that they brought to it. My five-year-old was watching with me, and she even said, "Daddy, they are fired up, right?" And I said, "Yes. Yes, they are." And let me talk more about passion. I'm going to save it. I'll talk about passion in a few minutes. Let's talk more baseball. So, yeah, they were fired up. A pitcher would get a strikeout and start pumping his fist and yelling. I saw where Aaron Judge said that both the U.S.-Mexico game and the U.S.-Dominican game were better atmospheres than when he played in the World Series. The Dominicans, they came into the game averaging 10 runs a game. And much like the crowd in Houston when U.S. played Mexico, the majority of the crowd in Miami was not pulling for the USA. I heard the broadcasters estimate that it was somewhere between 60-40 and 70-30. For each of those games, with the USA fans being the lower of those numbers, between 30 to 40% of the crowd, which is interesting, right? Would you make of the strike three call late in the game that ended the game against Dominican Republic? They had two of them curveballs that looked like they were balls, not strikes. And they were curveballs that were a tad low. But as every hitter knows, if you played baseball, you don't want to leave that third strike in the hands of the umpire. It's already been established that umpires are the bottom of the food chain, which you're going to essentially bet that you're betting basically that the ump doesn't blink, or what if a fly gets in Blue's eyes? Have you ever heard of that happening? An ump getting a fly in the eye or getting anything, I got something in my eye. And have you ever heard of that happening and he therefore doesn't make a strike call or a ball strike call? Says, "Oh, I'm sorry, I had something in my eye, I can't call this one." Nope, that's never happened as far as I know. He is going to make the call anyway. So, of course, it's incumbent on the hitter to swing at anything close with two strikes. That's like the basic rule of hitting. And they didn't in each case. So, I say that sucks for them. And I'm not just saying that because I was pulling for the U.S. I will also say I have umpired behind the plate before, not many times, but I've had the experience. And the biggest surprise, the biggest takeaway for me was how hard it is to tell if a ball is low or not. Because you're basically leaning over the catcher's shoulder trying to determine if it's a ball that's 13 inches off the ground, which would be a strike, or 11 and a half inches off the ground, which is a ball. And if you're judging a curveball, like at which point it crosses the plate relative to the hitter's knees, which you'd have to do it differently you'd have a different strike zone for each hitter, obviously, right? Because Aaron Judge and Jose Altuve are going to have two totally different strike zones. So it's not easy. So hitters, if I have any hitters listening, if you think a ball is a few inches outside the zone, if you have two strikes, you better put the ball in play. Don't leave it to chance, because if Blue calls it a strike, there is nothing you can do about it. But you argue and complain after the game, which is what they did. The USA roster has Aaron Judge, Bryce Harper, Bobby Witt Jr. Did you see the play he made against Mexico? And I love the story that the broadcasters are telling about the U.S. manager, Mark DeRosa. He called Gunnar Henderson and said, "We have a starting shortstop who is Bobby Witt Jr., but I want you on the roster." And then Gunnar says, "Okay, but I'm going to force your hand." And then he gets four hits in the first game he's in the lineup. Isn't that great? A little side story. When I was seven, we got a Nintendo. I was in second grade. And there was this game called Baseball for Nintendo. And it didn't have players' names or anything. It was all generic, just baseball teams. And this was even before RBI Baseball, which didn't come out till 1988. So what I would do is line up baseball cards on either side of me, like this team against that team, and those would be the hitters. And I'd have a full lineup, 9 against 9, and I would pretend like, Kirby Puckett was in the three hole, for example. Well, my ace pitcher, my favorite pitcher, was Bobby Witt. And I have no reason for it other than my 87 Topps card with the wooden border. Remember those? I had him slotted in the nine hole because the card was in good shape. He looked good in his Rangers uniform. And so he was my ace. So naturally, I pull for his son. But that game against Mexico, speaking of aces, Paul Skeens started. And he dealt. He was carving him up some Mexicans. Did you know that dude is 6'6", 260? He's another one it's hard not to root for. You know, dating the little gymnast from LSU, and he went to the Air Force. I saw where after the game the other night, he talked about a conversation when he was interviewed by Ken Rosenthal, who came up to his waist. Anybody else see that? He told him a story. Skeens told Rosenthal a story about talking to one of his buddies who is in the Air Force. And he said, I don't know where he's stationed right now, but said that he had told him he was going to wake up at 3 a.m. so that he could watch the game. And Skeen said that if this isn't in perspective enough already, he said it's heavy stuff. So I don't know how you don't pull for that guy. This isn't the first time they've had Major League All-Stars on the team. They won it all in 2017 with names like Buster Posey, Marcus Stroman, Christian Yelich. But this 2026 version of Team USA is super stacked. Really, I thought about going to the USA-Mexico game here in Houston. But when I looked on StubHub, the tickets were like $400 a piece just for decent seats. So I decided against it, and I watched it from the comfort of my couch instead. It's cool to have something sports-related to watch in the interim here between the end of football, and we had the Winter Olympics to watch. That was cool. But mainly between football and what is perhaps the most thrilling time in all of sports, March Madness. Speaking of which, I need to fill out my bracket, which costs money. The one I'm playing in is a $30 entry fee. So I need to do that. Venmo the money. But that's a good segue. Let's talk about some money stuff. So the Magnificent Seven, they're all down year to date and all underperforming the S&P 500. So the Mag 7 are Google, Amazon, Apple, Meta, NVIDIA, Microsoft, and Tesla. Software and SaaS companies, so it's being said that AI is eating software, they have been hit really hard. The ETF that tracks software companies, ticker IVG, is down more than 30% from its all-time high. And the sectors that are doing well this year are energy and materials. Now, what hasn't done well? Well, that would be tech, which is down over 3%. Consumer discretionary also down about 3%. And financial stocks are down 6% year to date. Now, why is energy doing so well? Well, one reason is the attack on Iran. But this started even before those strikes on Iran. It seems like I say Iran differently every time I say it. Crude oil saw the biggest weekly percentage increase in history when this conflict in Iran started. It jumped 36%. The crude oil ETF is USO, if you're curious. Gasoline is now $3.63 a gallon, $3.63 a gallon, which is a 24% increase from just 3 months ago. By the way, the unprecedented spike in the price of crude oil that I just mentioned, that was what is called a Six Sigma event, which means that, assuming a normal distribution, that's only supposed to happen once in every 4 million years. That kind of sounds like living in the 100-year floodplain in Houston, which they probably ought to change to the 5-year floodplain. And speaking of energy and oil prices, the drop in energy prices over the past 3 years is what has helped to reduce inflation. But with oil and gas going crazy right now, I don't think inflation will stay as low as it's been, but we shall see. The VIX, which I've talked about before, it measures volatility in markets. It went up 48% that first week of the conflict in Iran. When are markets going to bounce back? I don't know. When are they going to give us another all-time high? The future is unknowable. All this uncertainty is the reason stocks outperform cash and bonds in the long term. Stocks have a higher risk of losing money, but without that risk, there would be no higher reward. By the way, much of the information I just shared with you comes courtesy of Charlie Bellello, whose newsletter I subscribe to. He concluded the newsletter last week by answering about 7 questions. And those questions were, how long will the war last? How long will the Strait of Hormuz be closed? Will the U.S. send ground troops? And he answers all of them the same way, which is what I like to say. We don't know. The best, most optimistic way to look at it is the stock market rises over time, regardless of what's happening in the world, despite wars, military conflicts. And this isn't our first rodeo or war. It's not our first war. He added, Bellello I'm talking about, he added, all wars come to an end, and the economy and earnings, even if impaired in the short run, still tend to grow in the long run in spite of these conflicts. That is true. The exodus in markets recently, or year to date, has been from growth to value. Value is where the energy and material stocks are, and a lot of dividend-paying stocks are more value-oriented versus growth. I was going to talk about passion, right? I remember Scott Adams saying that successful people, when they're asked how they became successful, they'll often say passion is the key. Whereas Cal Newport would tell you that you want to be so good they can't ignore you. He's I can't remember if that was the book he wrote where he talked about how passion was not important. But Adams would say that successful people say they have this passion for the work because what they don't want to tell you is that they're smarter than you and they took more risk, or they got lucky, or they inherited $1 million, or just rode their dad's coattail, whatever. He would say, telling you it's passion is how rich people like him prevent the public from killing him and taking all his stuff. And so he says that's why rich people create a fictional story about how you too can have everything that rich people have if you would just have the passion. And in his book, Reframe Your Brain, which I am reading right now, he says it's all baloney. He says what you need is enough energy and enthusiasm to push through the inevitable hard times, the inevitable adversity that you're going to face in order that you need to go through in order to succeed. So the usual frame of passion is the key to success. He says it's better. The reframe is that passion is nice, but it's not required. And the very next reframe in his book, since I have it in front of me, is about the usual frame of how it takes money to make money. And he says the reframe is, I can turn energy into money. And he believed, like I do, that it's more important to work hard on yourself than it is to work hard on your job, which is something Jim Rohn used to say a lot. If you work hard on your job, you'll make a living. But if you work hard on yourself, you can make a fortune. And it's just dawned on me that I'm not as young as I once was, because the two people I just quoted who've had a huge influence on my life, they are not with us anymore. They have died. But hey, maybe that's when your own words start to carry some weight. Am I right? Like, when your mentors die, you're up next. It's time for you to be the positive influence for someone else, for the next generation. And God willing, I hope I can be that. I'm working on it. One young man at a time. If you want to try coaching with me, I do have a time slot available for you. The guy in Japan dropped off. It was very hard for us to find a time that worked for both of us because Japan is 15 hours ahead. So for a while there, we had calls at 2 p.m. on Thursdays, and it'd be 5 a.m. there, which is not ideal. So if you want to give it a try, let me know. 2 p.m. on Thursdays could be all yours and mine. We'll do it together. Let me throw a coaching plug in real quick, because I'm trying to get better about bragging about the guys that I work with, their successes. Girls too, but mostly dudes. I have this one client who, when we started working together, had no clue what their net worth was, but we calculated it and determined that their net worth was negative $164,000. That's how much they were in debt. Do you know what it is today, their net worth? Plus $622,000. How about that? Could I help you do that? Probably, but it won't happen overnight. I have been working with this person for 6 years, maybe 7 years. I don't know exactly. But that is quite a turnaround. Did you watch the Oscars? Yeah, I didn't either. I saw a good story about Robert Redford, though. What's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the name Robert Redford? Well, if you're like me, it's The Proposal. Remember, I'll give you $1 million for one night with your wife? And they took the deal, and it ruined their marriage? So I think the lesson there is never loan out your wife for a night for less than $2 million. It'll ruin you. Well, here's another story about Redford you might not have heard. Well, you probably heard the first one, but this one is from when he was acting. He's also now dead. He died last year. One time a director told him that he was too handsome for a role, but Redford insisted that he could play the part. So the director says to him, "Have you ever approached a woman at a bar and she turned you down?" And his answer was, "What do you mean?" You ever say something and before you say it, you think about how you're going to say it so as to be easily understood, hopefully? Like in your mind, you've said it as clear as you possibly could, and the other person says, "What do you mean?" And so you reply, "What do you mean? What do I mean?" That happens to me about once a month. I saw where the Oscars host, Conan O'Brien, made a joke about pedophilia, so I'm sure he won't be invited back. This is something I've thought about. I'd be curious to know, and you're going to think I'm weird, but you already think that. Does the animal kingdom frown upon pedophilia like we do, like humans? Like if two male horses see an attractive-looking filly prancing around the pasture, does one look at the other and say, "Mr. Ed, bro, stop that. Like, she's barely 1.5. Stop." I don't know. All right, let's get an update in the best movie ever. Is it possible for one man to be right about everything? I'd like to see a poll on what percentage of Americans would be in favor of a Muslim ban today. Sadly, with all the terror attacks happening in our country, everybody would guess, it's either going to be a radical Muslim or a tranny. It's like every time. I saw a story, this was last week I saw this, it was told by a Secret Service agent. He was saying that Trump has ruined him, and what he meant by that was he said he's protected multiple presidents through the years. He said Trump has ruined him for his job, not because he's hard to work for or he's difficult to work with, but because he's the opposite. He said Trump calls him by name, whereas all the other presidents he protected didn't know his name. He said he knows his wife's name, his kids' names. He asks about their baseball games. He said Trump attended his dad's funeral. And so he's saying he's not sure he could work for a future president after working for Trump. Says he makes sure that his guys eat first. So maybe he's a director level or a manager or something. I don't know, but he called him his guys. And he says he there's no way he could go back to the old standard after Trump has treated him like family. And that reminded me of the Jesse Jackson thing. I once saw Jesse Jackson on the streets of Krakow in Poland. This was October 2015. So it was very cold. We were both bundled up, like scarves bundled up. And I never wear a scarf. And we both had our heads down trying to break wind. So we both said, "Excuse me." That's not true. I made that up. I didn't talk to him. It was really too cold to talk to anybody. And you know when you see somebody in person that you've seen on TV all your life, so you're almost never sure, like you can't be 100% sure it's them? Well, AI is amazing because I just asked Grok if Jesse Jackson was in Krakow in 2015. And sure enough, he was. I'm not crazy. But did you see Jesse Jr. at his funeral? Get up there after Kamala and Obama and Biden turned the funeral into a political rally? The son was not having it, Jesse Jackson Jr. He said something like, "I sat here and listened to presidents for 3 hours. None of them even knew my father." And he said that his dad, Jesse Jackson, didn't care about the color of the president. And then the media, of course, said that Trump was notably absent. But those in the know, those who read more about, you know, they read past the headlines, they know that Trump did more for Jesse Jackson than Kamala, Obama, and Biden combined, or even that they ever even thought about doing for Jesse Jackson. So Jesse Jackson once said that Trump was a friend and praised him for reaching out and being inclusive. That's on tape. And Trump provided him with rent-free office space for many years. You know, the sort of thing that racists do, or at least did back in the, I think this was in the late 80s, early 90s. But Trump is the kind of guy who doesn't talk about all the good deeds he's done. And I like to think that I'm that way too. Although I have a buddy that he and I, whenever we do something good, we call each other and share the fact that we've done a good deed. If it's something cool, you know, that you've done for somebody. Because you want to tell somebody, but you don't want to be that guy. Which is, that's one of the dilemmas charitable people face. Should you give anonymously? Because if certain other people know that you've done something good, either volunteering or giving money, doing something charitable, they're much more likely to do something themselves. So it's kind of contagious that way. But it can also be seen as braggadocious. Like, look at me, I'm such a good person. What I think is like the net of it, I think you should share what you did. If you think the benefit of sharing, that benefit being motivating others to do the same, outweighs the cost, which is that cost being some people thinking that you're bragging and saying, look at me, I'm such a good person. So you have to measure them against each other and decide which is better. If you couldn't care less what people think of you, then definitely share that you've done something good. It's kind of a counterintuitive way to look at it, and I think that's the way I do look at it. I think what would be ideal is if you've done so much good for people in life, in this life, positively impacted so many people, that some of it's not going to be talked about until you're dead and gone. And I think there'll be a lot of that with President Trump. You know, something I didn't think about until I became a father and was telling my daughter this recently, I was telling her about my grandma, particularly the one that I lost last of my four grandparents. She, Grandma Chris, she called me on my wedding day and said she just wanted to welcome my wife to this crazy family. And the realization I came to was that my daughter will never have met any of my grandparents, which tells me how quickly we'll all be forgotten. All it would take, unless you're famous, I guess, it is for you to be the last of your lineage to have memories of that grandparent. But I only met two of my great-grandparents, and definitely don't know anything about their parents or the great-grandparents I never met either. I don't know anything about them. And what that makes me think about is there's a book called Some 40 Tales of the Afterlives. It's a great read if you're looking for one. It's a bunch of little short stories. They're like theories about what happens after you die. And I can't remember if this one's in that book or not, but I heard this theory somewhere that you stay stuck in purgatory until the last time your name is uttered. And I find that one so fascinating because the implication would be that if your name is said for the next 1,000 years, that you probably had a great life on earth, which is balanced out by all the time that you've had to spend in purgatory. So like Babe Ruth, for example, or Michael Jordan, or Obama, they would be in purgatory a long time. But there need to be an exception clause for those who, like Hitler, that, you know, he'd have a do not pass go, no $200 for you, you're going straight to hell kind of thing. So your soul can get to burning right away. Let's talk tech. You want to talk some tech? They have new AirPods coming out. I have trouble keeping up with what they call all the versions of AirPods, and I'd be embarrassed to tell you how many pairs I've bought in my life, but I have always justified it by saying, well, we bought their stock in early 2018, so we can buy Apple products no problem. But these new ones are going to be twice the price, so usually you can get them for about $200. But these new ones, because of one feature, I am thrilled. They're going to allow you to translate other languages in real time in your ears. My only hope is that it doesn't catch on around the world, and I'm sure that's going to happen eventually, but that way you can know what they're saying about you. So like ladies, when you're at the nail salon after they ask you, you have boyfriend? You'll know, you're going to know what they're saying about you after you say you have no boyfriend. Like, she'll turn to her friend and say, she no have boyfriend because she have dirty nail. And you'll know because before you walked in, you will have switched your AirPods to translate Vietnamese. So you're going to know what they're saying. But once it catches on, your AirPods are, you know, that your AirPods can translate any language. They'll see the AirPods in your ear and probably not talk anymore. But that's a win too, right? Win-win. And win is not spelled N-G-U-Y-E-N, which is a popular Vietnamese name. These new AirPods, they can be ordered March 25th. They're calling them AirPods Max 2. What they're going to do is auto-adjust to block noise better. They're going to lower the volume when you talk on the phone. They're also going to clean up your voice on voice calls. But for me, the translation thing alone, that's going to make them worth buying. The price will be $549. So that is almost three times the cost of what they usually are. Another thing going on in tech, there's a company called RYSE that is building the AI layer for you to have a smart home, quote unquote smart, with a focus on window coverings. So blinds and shades, window treatments. They say that over 90% of window coverings are still manually controlled today. And that includes homes and offices and hotels. And all those are, I mean, they predict that they're all going to be smart and that the dumb ones are going to be exceptions here pretty soon. So the early leaders in the smart home space have been Google, because they acquired Nest for over $3 billion. And then Amazon bought Ring for more than $1 billion. So what RYSE is hoping is to follow in their footsteps and have as much success with window covering automation. So far, they've got $15 million in revenue. They hold 10 different patents, and they're now sold in over 100 Best Buy stores. So the company is going to be listed on the NASDAQ. Their ticker will be RYSS. And they, right now, they're in what will likely be their last public funding round before they shift toward institutional investors. Their shares are priced at $2.45 pre-IPO. And if you invest now, they'll give you bonus shares. So if you invest $2,500, you get 10% more shares. Invest $5,000, you get 15% more shares. $50,000 gets you 30% in bonus shares. And $100,000 gets you 40% more shares. So as always, I don't recommend investing in individual stocks, even though I do it sometimes. But I don't recommend it because it's very risky, especially something like this. But I thought it was interesting and I wanted to share it with you. Bank of America this month, or earlier in March this month, gave Tesla a buy rating, the stock, and they gave it a price target of $460. It's right around $400 a share right now. And this is largely driven by robo-taxi optimism. So they attribute, Bank of America I'm talking about, they attribute 52%, more than half, of Tesla's overall valuation to robo-taxis, which is more than double the 21% contribution from its car business. So they're confident that they'll be able to scale, that Tesla will be able to scale their production and get past regulations and gain the approvals they need to operate. But both are slow going thus far. Elon Musk has said that manufacturing on the Cybercab and Optimus, which is Optimus is their humanoid robot, that the manufacturing has stalled mainly because they need to work more on extending their battery life. They've had problems with the transmission. The battery life's not long enough. And so they've had quite a few problems that's kind of forced them to redesign both the Cybercab and Optimus. So now you know why the stock has stalled around $400 a share. The dedicated Cybercab is currently operating on roads in Austin, Texas, and it's mostly Model Ys, Model Y cabs. So Tesla plans to spend more than $20 billion this year in 2026, which is more than double their spend last year, which was only $9 billion. And that CapEx money is going to fund factories for both cyber cabs and their humanoid robots. Oh, also semi-trucks, and they're coming out with sports cars too. So what they're doing is betting that their investments today in autonomous hardware will eventually generate a bigger ROI, return on investment, than their electric vehicles, their sedans and their crossovers. A Morgan Stanley analyst expects that Tesla will have 1,000 robo-taxis on roads by the end of 2026 and 1 million by 2035. Kathy Wood of the ARK Fund, who we've talked about before. I remember Morgan Troxclair and me and I talking about that. Kathy Wood believes Tesla will have a 50% share of the global robo-taxi market by the year 2030. But she has been wrong a lot in the past, so we'll see. Let me give you something to think about. This is something I was talking about with one of my guys. He was struggling with some anxiety recently. And the reason, he said, was that he'll think of something health-related, usually based on how he's feeling at the time. And he immediately starts doing research, starts taking himself down rabbit holes, kind of like a self-induced anxiety. And what I suggested to him is to make note of whatever that thought is that takes him down a rabbit hole and then come back to it later. And oftentimes, what you'll find is that you're no longer interested in whatever that thing is that you were concerned about when the thought occurred to you. So if you could just delay the time that you start your research, a lot of times the interest will fade. And I'm sure this is something we can all relate to. I know I can, where I'll make note of, say, a book I want to read, and I have a whole list in my phone that I'll never be able to get to. I couldn't read them all in five lifetimes, but... Or no, a better example would be X. So I'll bookmark something with the intention of coming back to it, and then when I look at it a week later, it's not something that interests me anymore. And I also suggested that he think about thoughts the same way that he thinks about books, which is that when you read a book, you get to decide whether what you've read is going to be applicable for you in your life. So you read a book and say to yourself, well, can I apply this somewhere that would serve me? And I argue you could do the same with thoughts. You get to decide whether to indulge the thought. Does this thought serve me? And if not, discard it or delay it and find it discarded a week from now when you go back to it because it doesn't interest you anymore. If you're not sure and you're anxious to explore the thought further, you can make note of it and you can come back to it later. Usually, when you come back to it later, there's less emotion involved and it can reduce anxiety. And later, you'll be able to be more objective, right? Which is why you want to delay emotions or why when you get angry, you should sleep on it and then send that scathing email in the morning or write it at night and then find that you're not wanting to send, you shouldn't send the message until the next morning. And then you find out that the anger has faded and you're fine and you don't even need to send the email. Author Schopenhauer had a thought on this. He said, men of learning are those who have read the contents of books. Thinkers, geniuses, and those who have enlightened the world and furthered the race of men are those who have made direct use of the book for the world. Yeah, the key is in living deliberately and being discerning, you get to decide whether the contents of a book you've read is something that you're going to apply to your life. Whether what's in a book is something you're going to use to make your world better and impact the lives of others, make their world better. And it's the same with thoughts. That's all I've got for you today on this beautiful spring day. And spring is when most flourishing starts to happen. So include yourself in that, in the flourishing, and I will too. And I appreciate you listening. If there's something I can do for you, let me know. And God bless you. Bye-bye, friends.